The sales robots have taken over, and they're decimating deals left and right, destroying them right in their tracks. On the AI for Sales podcast, our mission is to empower everyday sellers to embrace AI superpowers to build new bridges and crush quota. Dr. Joel Aban said it best in the AI for Sales book, "In sales, time kills deals. In AI for Sales, AI kills time." Join our hosts as we learn from the C-suite of the world's fastest growing companies about how you can leverage AI today to transform your sales revenue engine while being the best version of you.
Hey everybody, Chad Burmeister, and I am your host of the AI for Sales podcast. And today I'm here with Lance Brothers. He's the CRO of NCS, otherwise known as NC Solutions, NCS for short. And we're excited to dig in with Lance. So Lance, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chad. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a fun year. I think I've probably had 50 to 75 people on the AI for Sales show. I also run a second show called Living a Better Story. So between the two, we're well over 100. And I just enjoy digging in and understanding kind of where their backgrounds are, and then what they're seeing changing in the world of artificial intelligence. So some people define AI completely different than others, and it's just interesting to dig in. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Looking forward to chatting.
So I think to help everyone get to know you, you are currently in Chicago, the Windy City, I think it's called, if I remember right. And did you grow up there, or what was your thing when you were a kid? Where'd you grow up, and what'd you love to do when you were younger?
Yeah, I grew up actually kind of in a rural part of the Midwest when I was a kid, kind of in northern Indiana. And when I was a kid, I was just obsessed, frankly, with baseball. And kind of due to my dad, I was obsessed with the Cubs, for better or for worse, specifically. So growing up, I was kind of a mediocre player, but I was an all-star super fan. But it didn't take me long, I guess, to realize as a kid, especially as a Cubs fan, trying to get up here to Chicago a lot to see games, that they just were doing a lot of things wrong, while a few other teams seemed to have it figured out right. So I'd spent a lot of my time growing up just watching, listening, going to as many games as I possibly could. And that was back in the analog days, you know, so I'd pour through, you know, the almanacs, the box scores, the game summaries, all that kind of thing, and really go down that rabbit hole around, you know, data. You know, baseball collects so much data, and I always loved that as a kid. And it was a great way for me to try to figure out, what was going wrong with this team? And like, and how do you fix it? And those sort of things. But this is kind of that pre-Moneyball time. It was pre-Billy Bean. I wasn't really aware of Bill James or sabermetrics or any of that kind of stuff. And honestly, I wouldn't have been able to probably figure it out if I could. But at the time, when I was a kid, I really, really, in my mind, kind of be that mini GM of the Cubs and follow that notion of baseball, and just got really into that notion of like how data comes together and how you're able to actually use the art and the science of like scouting and some of that stuff that stats kind of brought together to figure out, A, what's wrong with this team? You know, B, what's it going to take to get them over the hump? And, you know, C, try to figure out if I'm ever going to see a win in my entire lifetime. It actually really influenced kind of where I'm at today. I don't think it's a coincidence that actually like this obsession either led to either a symptom or the reason kind of affecting where I'm at physically. Like you said, I'm in Chicago. I spent my entire adult life actually living within walking proximity of the ballpark, but also professionally. I spent pretty much my entire career at this point in media, market research, just working on services and actually trying to help advertisers in particular just understand and improve outcomes with data and insights. So baseball kind of teed me up. It's affected where I live and kind of affects what I do as well.
I love it. A girl that I dated in high school, her older sister married a very famous first baseman from the Chicago Cubs. So if you were to I'm blanking on his name right now. What's the most famous first baseman from the Cubs?
Well, the most famous first baseman would be Ernie Banks. He's a shortstop and a first baseman, but I'm sure she didn't marry him.
No.
Probably from the era, would it be like Mark Grace?
Mark Grace. There you go. You got it.
There you are.
Yeah. A+. You know your data. That's for sure.
One of my sabermetric favorites, actually, for a long time when I was growing up.
Yeah. So she had two amazing kids. They're no longer together, but they're still best friends. So,
We used to see him a lot in the neighborhood running around. So I'm sure I probably bumped into her at some point during that era as well.
Yeah, that's excellent. So the next question I like to ask is interesting. And I've carried this over from my Living a Better Story show. So this is, if that younger self that was monitoring, you know, that loved to follow the Cubs and the baseball and everything that you did then, if you were able to talk to yourself from then to now and say, hey, man, you've done a great job. Here, here's the gap that I see. Is there any gap from what you thought you would be doing as a kid to what you're doing now?
That's a good question. I don't know. I honestly still don't fully know what I want to do when I grow up. But I would think like the kid in me, I guess, would just I guess he'd be happy to see that I actually had pulled together some of that notion of like trying to bring together like the art and the science behind some of the data and things that are go there. I'm sure that he'd be like the pesky kid that asks a lot of questions, why things are as they are, why people do what they do, you know, whatever, what finally got the Cubs to win. But I would think they'd probably just say, you know, they're happy if I were able to stay curious. If that were the case, they'd be happy where I'm at, and they probably wouldn't even see there's a gap.
Yeah, love it. It's fun to recognize if there is a gap that's 1 degree or 500 degrees, but to take mental note of it. So let's shift. Now that we've kind of gotten to know who you are, tell us a little bit about your organization. Are you currently using artificial intelligence in your technology or helping companies deploy AI? Or talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's actually both. Really today, almost all the services at NC Solutions that we have are actually powered in some way by artificial intelligence. And soon, the entire portfolio is actually going to be actually powered through machine learning. So we've actually built and leveraged a bunch of sophisticated models. We actually use a lot of the things in the models you've seen actually applied even in like clinical trials in the healthcare industry to kind of inform, you know, what we do. So to give you a sense kind of what we do, and then we'll kind of go into, I think, maybe how AI and machine learning plays into that. You know, we're an advertising effectiveness improvement company. So what we really do is we focus on consumer packaged goods brands and their partners. So think like foods, beauty, prep, cleaning products, like those sort of things you see out there in the marketplace. We help those brands really try to figure out whether and even to what degree their campaigns actually generate sales, either in stores or online. We also work with their partners, their advertising agencies, but also like all the digital platforms, TV and audio networks, that sort of thing, as well as retailers to really figure out and understand themselves how well ad campaigns that work with them drive actual outcomes. So we do that sort of thing. We actually use machine learning to actually help them figure out which are the best households to advertise towards, who's more likely to buy your product, who's more likely to maybe come over from your competitor, those sort of pieces, and then give them the data in real time to optimize against those sort of pieces. So, I mean, really, in summary, what we do is like we basically help advertisers get a lot more return for their ad investment, for their spending, and help ad sellers better value the impact that they have really in driving brand sales. But that entire thing is actually predicated on AI, because, you know, actually proving or improving sales impact from CPG advertising, it gets really complex really quickly. So you think about it, there's so many variables that impact whether or not a person decides to buy a product, you know, in the store or online. There's availability, the price, are you aware of the product at all? Did you see a persuasive ad? All those sort of things. And to really break down and isolate the relationship between seeing the ad, you know, wherever it may be, we need millions and millions of data points, and they're flowing constantly through the marketplace. So we have to have machine learning in particular to help us just better understand, okay, what data do we take into our models? You know, how do we determine which variables have the greatest impact? And how do we combine those models to really estimate, you know, the current campaign or the future impact that comes from advertising and sales? I mean, machine learning for us kind of undergirds just this constant improvement in those sort of pieces. So we can be faster, or more granular, or more accurate, or more representative in trying to just assess sales impacts. It really affects everything and every facet of what we really do.
Wow, that's it. It makes sense, because without it, without AI, it sounds like the business doesn't even exist. I mean, how did you transpose your business from then to now? What's changed? How did you implement this type of technology?
Yeah, we've been around for about 11 years. And, you know, when we first started, this sort of technology really wasn't available. But when I think about like artificial intelligence, and really for us specifically machine learning, we simply wouldn't be able to deliver today with the same speed, the power, the granularity the marketplace kind of needs, and really what we need to actually deliver our services. When we first did this, you know, we were a measurement-based company kind of primarily. We've expanded kind of beyond that, but things were much more manual. Our models were much more complicated to maintain and improve without the ability to bring in AI and even more specifically machine learning as part of those pieces. So when I think about how we would look, you know, we literally couldn't offer the full scope of services we have today. Our processes would be so much more manual. The scale, the quality, all the things we currently provide would be really, really difficult to replicate. So we're really lucky here. And for the size of the company that we are, we've got a really robust R&D and data sciences team. But you know, without machine learning, kind of things that undergird that, we need even more data scientists, even more researchers, many more analysts, just to churn through all the millions of rows of data, all the touch points that happen with consumers. And really, if we wanted to continue innovating, which has kind of been our approach to the market, it would be very, very difficult to do without machine learning as part of these pieces.
Yeah, that's the theme that I've heard through several dozen of these interviews this year. There's someone I should bring up, because I just did some outreach for a gentleman named Jesus Valdez, who's in Colorado, and he is one of the CPG marketing leaders who, you know, has worked for two or three different major brand companies, and he's in between jobs right now. So he came, I was on a conference call with him the other day, and he said, "Hey, can you help me do outreach to the possible CPG players in the space?" And if you do Colorado only, we're talking maybe a dozen. If you span the US for the type of position and amazingness that this guy brings to the table, there's several hundred only, not thousands. So it's a unique space. And I think there's a handful of people who truly understand how to grasp the power of AI in advertising for CPG and tie those, connect the dots, as you talked about a minute ago.
Yeah, I certainly agree.
Thinking about AI in sales, maybe for your sales team, or maybe you've talked to other people that are using AI, where are you seeing AI technology? And I think there's a difference between automation and artificial intelligence. You obviously, with your customers, you know the difference, where a lot of people I talk to on this show really don't have a grasp of what the difference is. But what are you seeing AI come into the sales motion at all in your space?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, both for us as a sales organization, and I think as well as the clients we work with. So like for us, you know, very tactically, we're using AI and machine learning things, and a lot of tools and technologies we have just to make our own messages better, make our own outreach better, make our own outreach stronger. You know, it helps us figure out which, you know, prospects, contacts, who's more likely to respond and take a meeting based on a variety of signals we can actually capture, some testing we can do around the messaging that goes behind it. It's just made us more nimble and made us smarter and actually more effective around some of those things. But, you know, a lot of our business and what we're doing is actually trying to empower our clients' sales and the sales that happen from that. So all of our AI kind of works to support what we see a lot of our clients trying to do. You know, we have brands and ad buyers who just need like reliable, granular signals to optimize the sales that they have in the marketplace, either from the current campaigns they have or future campaigns that kind of go as part of that. So it's important we're giving those sort of things out, and AI and machine learning allows us to do that quickly. It also lets us kind of feed the other side of the engine, you know, the ad sellers themselves. They need reliable data as quickly as possible, because a lot of times what will happen is you've got an ad campaign and you sold it into a brand, but you need time for the consumer behavior to actually take place. These campaigns might go weeks. They might go months. So you need signals and you need ways to understand while that campaign's happening. You know, are you doing a good job for that brand? Are you having an impact for that brand? Because you want to pitch them on the next campaign coming up. And, you know, they're not going to wait for 3 and 4 months to launch the next campaign. They're launching things regularly. So it's really important for us to have machine learning be able to speed up what we do and also give reliable data back to these folks to empower their sales. And we see them employ that kind of throughout the key. But, you know, the word I use there, and the thing that's really important, is like the data itself has to be reliable. So like machine learning really does enable us to build on kind of what we already do to more accurately measure and actually sometimes even predict consumer behavior for the entire marketplace. But it's, you know, it's machine learning. And you talked about the difference here about like kind of automation versus machine learning. It's not just modeling that's important with this. And that's kind of what the development we've seen is. It actually has to be learning. So we have just this massive data set. We're collecting things all the time. We've also got, you know, that R&D team that I mentioned with a decade plus of measurement expertise. So it's important that we're actually using the technology to keep feeding better data in, keep tweaking the analogs and things that we have so we can teach the machines to actually help us in a lot of ways to get our data more granularly, more quickly, more effectively, and help us even find insights that we couldn't see if we were doing it by ourselves. But the people play a role in all of that as well. When that all comes together, we're actually able to empower our clients, I think, in a lot of ways to help their sales.
So I'm wondering if there's an example that you can share, and maybe it's not the actual company, But I even think of going to the grocery store at 5:30 a.m. the other day, and I saw all those people stocking shelves. And, you know, right out of college, I almost took one of those jobs. And I said, you know, I don't know if stocking M&Ms on shelves would be a good idea. I'll probably gain a bunch of weight. I really think that's why I didn't take that job. But, you know, are there examples in your space maybe you can share where, hey, company ABC was getting this and then they deployed the new approach and then they were able to increase sales by X, Y, or Z?
Yeah, I can sort of fill an example there because we're starting to see it evolve a lot in terms of what our clients themselves are actually able to take on themselves in terms of AI and kind of machine learning as part of that. So there's a huge number of you know, companies and businesses and data sets out there around some of the stuff you've mentioned around like the placement on the shelf, the pricing models, all those things that kind of come into play. We're focused specifically on the impact of advertising and kind of targeting, you know, consumers to make the advertising as effective as possible. But what we're starting to see happen is a lot of our clients are actually starting to use some of their own like AI-driven predictive algorithms to kind of better leverage either that data that they're pulling in from others or in a lot of cases, data they have themselves to kind of wed that with what we're able to kind of see and ascertain through our services around the signals in the marketplace in terms of effectiveness for the campaign and whether or not it actually is driving sales. So it's all coming together where they're actually using a lot of disparate data points that all are, you know, part of the stocking, the purchase cycle, all the things that go as part of that to come together and have different technologies really dive into this data and figure out better ways to see what's in there and then ideally optimize whether it's their supply chain, their pricing models, whatever it might be, or for we're interested in, better optimize their creative, their media outlets, the things that are actually impacting at the bottom of the funnel to drive sales.
Got it. Yeah, I can only imagine because in Facebook advertising and YouTube and all these different channels, there's so many variables that can go into the model. And that doesn't even talk about the metaverse. Have you dabbled in that at all yet?
Not as much. No, I mean, we're certainly involved with a lot of the platforms in terms of like some of the data points that are there, but we have not gone, you know, as far into the metaverse and the pieces that are there.
I talked to someone a few weeks ago and she's 25. She was supposed to go to medical school and take her MCADs and then COVID hit. And so she completely changed her life. And now she's learning about NFTs and she wore a Burberry outfit. And she said, yeah, I can't tell you the company name, but just based on my outfit that I'm wearing, you'll probably get an understanding of who I'm talking to. But she's helping this company come into the NFT world and bring their stuff to the metaverse. And there were stories upon stories at this event that I was at where, you know, you buy this advertising space on a wall for $400 one day, the next day it's $40,000, the next day it's, you know, $400,000. Mm-hmm. And it's just such an evolving space of how do you, you know, how do you bring your trademarks over into this new virtual world that we're moving to? So it's kind of a wild times and we're right here.
It's going to be funny to watch. I mean, you think back, I mean, you know, advertising's been going on as long as communication's been going on, or as long as commerce has been going on. So it's going to be interesting to see how it evolves, I think, into that space. And then still, how do you figure out how do you optimize in that space? How do you attribute sales in that space? How do you do all those sort of things? We're going to have a lot more data available, which is super cool. And there's going to be ways for us to maybe leverage insights we've had in the past and bring those into the new data sets and technologies that come together. But there's still a lot we don't know. I'm really curious to see how this fully
goes. Well, here's an example. There was a news story that my company was in the beginning of the year, and it had about 18,000 views on YouTube. Later that month, one person who has 375,000 followers posted that same news article to his followership, and then it blew up, right? Everybody heard about this news article. So what that makes me think of is the power of the individual is so huge that traditionally these big, large media corps had all the power and they're losing that power and it's exactly going to the individuals. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see where it goes. So thinking of AI and the sales motion and based on what you're doing today, if you fast forward 3 years, 5 years, 10 years into the future, what do you think changes from your vantage point?
It's interesting to think about. I mean, I don't think the sales pressures and needs are ever going to go down. At least in my career, I haven't seen those things happen. So I think what it's going to be is certainly a desire and a need to keep taking out as many of the tasks as possible to make sales kind of smarter in a lot of ways. I don't think you can ever get to a spot where you're going to fully replace, you know, sales professionals, but you certainly are going to look for ways to complement what they already do. And you're already starting to see it happen sometimes. And like some of these, like just more transactional sales, at first it was very simple stuff like that Burberry sweater, you know, those sort of things that could happen all via online or even through AI or a chatbot could handle that entire sale. But it's been interesting to kind of see in spaces we're not in, but certainly in spaces where you start to see a lot more somewhat complicated sales starting to happen around like AI and some pieces happen there with like insurance or wireless carriers or whatever it might be kind of in that sense. And we have seen it in the ad tech world, you know, where we're at already. You look at like programmatic targeting, auctions, bidding, all the things that have happened there. You know, there were humans behind that at first trying to manage all the bids and the requests, and all those placements and all those things. And it's been fully automated. But I don't think it's ever going to get to a spot where it fully, at least in the B2B world, you know, replaces the sales pro or replaces anything's kind of behind that. I think there's always going to be a need for relationships, and especially for that strategic, consultative, complex sale. I think for a long time there's going to be, you know, a need for that human element. But I think ML in particular and AI as well are going to help augment either what story to tell, how to better tell that story, or bring better insights to the story so you can actually have a very consultative approach.
Well, and I think you nailed it. Augmentation is the word of the day. Our podcast used to be called AI for Sales, and it blew out, Artificial Intelligence for Sales. Well, now we crossed out artificial and we changed it to augmented because it really does seem that the low-end tasks that traditionally a salesperson perform can be performed by the technology. But you're right, building trust, creating relationships, you know, at least today, it'd be hard for a bot to create a relationship with somebody.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. So I guess the last question is on the same vein, and that is kind of the elephant in the room. Does it replace some group of people, right? I think of SDRs and BDRs that their job it is to find the contact, send an email, do a LinkedIn touch, maybe leave a voicemail or try to talk to somebody. You know, there's certain types of functions in the sales roles that may be reduced or eliminated. How does that transpire? I mean, you've lived through a handful of these probably, you know, just like when farming used to be about 50 people on a farm and now it might be five. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's I mean, look, there's certainly going to be creative disruption, right? That's kind of the way it always works. The jobs will change and kind of what people are able to do in that world, I think, will change as part of it as well. But like we talked, you know, a few seconds ago, it's really about maybe removing the tasks, removing the things that maybe slow down throughput and mentioning letting us focus much more, I think, on insights. I think that's what's going to change. It's like the jobs themselves are going to evolve to be more consultative, more, you know, more able to build the relationship strategically and a little bit less on like the transaction itself is what I think is going to happen. I mean, I still believe very much there's always going to be this notion, even in this world going forward, of trying to balance out the art and the science. Like I always talked about baseball before. Like, it's always fun as a kid where you'd argue on the hot stove league and it'd be like, well, the stats say this, but my eyes say that, or my uncle likes this guy, or my favorite player is that, but the stats say this. And I think there's still going to always be this note of balancing out the art and the science. And, you know, for that, I think you're going to still need in a lot of ways just that human element make that sort of thing possible. I mean, we've certainly seen as the science keeps improving that, you know, AI and machine learning help us find things faster. And there's certainly, you know, there are things we can see as well to even have it improve some of the creative elements that happen in the marketplace. But when they focus on like the optimizing by the results and trying to figure out the why an ad actually might have worked more than this other ad is, as opposed to just knowing that it did or tracking deeper levels of just, you know, the reach that happened with that, that's still going to involve, I think, people for a long time to either feed the models or interpret what comes out and keep the relationship alive.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I've enjoyed the conversation, Lance. If somebody wants to get a hold of you or check out your organization and how you help CPG, how would they best find you?
They can reach me at lance.brothers@ncsolutions.com or look us up on the web the same way at ncsolutions.com.
All right. Well, thanks for joining, Lance. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in to this week's AI for Sales podcast. I will catch you next time. And thanks for listening.
Hey, you made it this far in your AI for Sales journey. Want to augment your sales growth? First, leave us a review and then visit www.scalex.ai to claim your free strategy session today.